was not going to sit up here, heart. Here, you take it from me. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
My name is Dot Thompson, and I am an addict. My sobriety date is April 13, 1985. Yeah. And for that, I am truly, truly grateful, okay? Truly grateful to be an addict. First of all, let me thank you guys, the committee, for inviting me up, okay? It's such an honor to be invited to speak anywhere. And when they called and said, "Doc, can you do it?" my first thought was, "Sure I can." I had no idea it was going to be below zero temperatures when I got here. Okay? By the way, I'm from Austin, Texas, and it doesn't snow in Austin that often, okay? And when it does, the whole city shuts down, all right? Let me see. They simply tell you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. But before I get started, let me tell you guys something. I tend to talk fast sometimes, okay? And when I get a little bit excited, I get real fast, all right? So if I get too fast for anybody, somebody give me a peace sign or something, and I'll try to slow down, okay? I had gone to a meeting one night, guys, a meeting, and I shared in a meeting one night. And after the meeting was over, this guy comes up to me, and he says, "Dot, I know God must have really been speaking through you." My ego went sky high, y'all, okay? I thought, I must have said something really profound. So I asked him, "Well, if you think God was speaking to me, what was it that I said that made you think God was speaking through me?" He said, "Oh, well, anything that you said, but under your own power, you couldn't possibly talk that fast." So I try to slow down and talk a little bit slower. I'm a very fast talker, though, okay? Let's see where I began. I was born in the South and raised during segregation, okay? I don't know when I started to feel less than, but somewhere along the line, guys, I started to feel less than, okay? One of the first things I remember is my father left the family when I was about 8 years old, and I remember thinking deep down inside, it's my fault. Don't ask me why I thought it was my fault, but it was my fault, okay? I took all the blame for everything most times, all right? I remember other things. Oh, let me go back a minute after my segregation. When I was about 6 years old, I remember going, my mama took me downtown, and I remember going downtown, and we went to this big department store called Goldsmith in Memphis, Tennessee, by the way. I got sober there. No, I didn't either, but that's where I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, okay? Mama left the south side, and she left me outside standing. She went to the bathroom. And so when she went in, I'm 6 or 7 years old, and I'm reading signs, just learning how to read. There were two water fountains sitting right next to each other. And one said white, and one said color. I remember thinking, oh, they got a different kind of water here in this city, right? So I went over to the white fountain, and I turned it on, and it was clear. I thought, what's up with this, you know? I walked over to the color fountain, and turned it on, and it was clear, too. I've been wondering, what's up with this, okay? So I reached over, I said, oh, it must taste different. So I reached over to taste the colored water, and it must taste like water. So I go back over, and I'm going to taste the white water, because I knew it had to taste different. Why else do they have two water fountains, right? As I walk back over to the white fountain, and I turn it on, getting ready to reach over and taste it, Mama comes out of the bathroom. She jerks me aside and says, "Baby, you can't do that. Mama, I'm thirsty." She says, "Baby, you're colored. You can't drink out of the white fountain." You know, I really felt less than, because I didn't understand that, okay? I didn't understand there were two water fountains with clear water coming out, but Mama says I couldn't drink out of the one that was called white. There were a couple other incidents that happened when I was growing up that led me to believe that I was blessed then and very, very different from the rest of the world, okay? One was one Easter, we were a poor family, so we didn't get a chance to go shopping for Easter till like the day before. So one, we went shopping for Easter that Sunday, I mean that Saturday, and I found this fantastic Easter bunny, guys. It was to die for, okay? I said, Mama, please get me that. She bought it for me. I wanted to try it on, but she says, no, babe, because colored people can't try on clothes in this store. So I went on home, got up Easter Sunday, and the hat was too small. And I still to this day remember thinking, boy, if I just hadn't been colored, I could have tried that hat on and it would have worked for me, okay? That was one of those things that I still remember vividly growing up believing that I was just less than, guys, okay? But life goes on. My father left the family, like I said, my father left the family when I was 8. And my oldest brother started to sexually molest me, okay? Now, I didn't go tell him about it because I didn't want to tell him. I was scared to tell Mama, so I didn't tell anybody, right? I just suffered with this all of my life, okay, all of my early childhood. And he told me if I told Mama, he'd tell me I was lying and she put me, so I didn't tell anybody, okay? But now I remember when I got to be about 9, and what I forgot to tell you guys, I was born a fat kid, okay? At birth, I weighed 13.8 pounds, okay? And never lost an ounce, all right? So by the time I got to be, I'm 9 years old, Mama decides, you're too fat, so she takes me to the doctor, and they gave me diet pills. I was in seventh heaven, okay? I remember the first pill that I took, it was like, wow, you know, I'm gonna get up and run around the block 10 times and stuff, okay? No, but that afternoon, I started realizing, I started coming down, realizing, oh, I'm not the way this feels. So, you know, my little 8 or 9 year old head, my mind told me, if you take one in the morning, take another by 2 o'clock, you feel good all day. So I started taking 2 a day. But y'all know what that meant, right? My 30 day supply was now gone in 15 days, okay? And I'm wondering, what am I supposed to do? But then all the guys in the neighborhood knew that I could get speed, okay? This was speed they were giving me. They knew I could get these amphetamines, and so they were paying me to go to the doctor, y'all. I'm 9 years old. I'm seeing 5 doctors selling my pills to the big guy. Drug dealing, don't even know it, okay? 9 years of drug dealing, guys, okay? So that goes on. I don't remember how long, but I've been on for a long time, okay? Now, my next time I got introduced to a drug or something, it was when I was 13. And I told you my brother had been sexually molesting me all that time, okay? I remember hiding in closets. I knew he was coming home. I hid in these dark closets. We had this thing called it's called a wardrobe now, but we called them a shift robe back in the day, okay? And you go in there, had a little light on it, and I'd go in there and hide for many a time. And if I knew he was coming home, I'd get in and hide. The mama came home that night. I'd go to sleep in there and forget it. I got to this program, I was wondering, what the hell are you scared of being in the dark? Had no clue until I wrote some of these steps, y'all. It came back to me why I was afraid of being in the dark. But at 13, I had my first drink of alcohol. About 5 or 6 guys in the neighborhood got together, and then I bought a fifth of some cheap vodka. And we all got sat around, we drank cheap vodka, okay? I got sick as a dog. First time I ever drank out, I drank alcoholically, okay? Got sick as a dog, drunk as a skunk, throwing up all over the place, room spinning around all over the place. I remember thinking, dog, vodka is bad. I will never do that no more. And I didn't. To this day, I have never tasted vodka again, okay? Now, the next weekend, we got together, and this time, they put the money together, and we have this enough money to buy like a fifth of scotch. They bought from the cheap cutter stock, okay? So that night, we had this bottle of scotch, and we all drank it, okay? And that night, y'all, I wasn't throwing up sick. That night, I feel good. That night, I get home, and my brother starts this little routine with me, right? And in no uncertain terms, I said to him, if you ever touch me again, I'll kill you. And from that day forward, he never touched me again. Now, think about my little 12-year-old, 13-year-old head. Vodka is bad, but scotch is good. What? So I started drinking scotch every chance I get up. Keep in mind, I'm only 13 years old, so I wasn't able to get it often. But all the way through high school, whenever anybody would go buy something, I'd suggest, get scotch. So I kept drinking scotch through high school. By the way, guys, I went to college, okay? Got a degree. Started a job as a computer programmer. Now keep in mind that I'm feeling real terribly as it was, okay? I started my feel like I wasn't good enough way back when, all right? So I still don't feel like I'm good enough. So I get this job as a white male profession. I'm a black woman, right? I get this job, and by the way, this is in the 60s I'm talking about, y'all, okay? And I get a job, and things are going okay. I'm doing this, everybody looking at me, you're a programmer? Yeah, program. But you're not white, you're not a man. That's okay, I'm still programming, okay? And then in 1964, they passed the Civil Rights Bill. And I remember thinking, I can do whatever the hell I want to do. Okay? You see, because when I really started college, the only profession open to me was to be a school teacher. I mean, that's the only thing black women could be in the South, was a school teacher. But now, by the time they passed the Civil Rights Bill, I can be whatever I want to be. So now I can be a programmer, and I started programming and traveling all over the country programming, okay? Now, life went on, things were pretty good. I got married. That marriage didn't last. And of course, I blamed me for that. I'm the reason my marriage broke, failed, okay? And I just kept thinking I was just no good, guys, okay? I knew that something had to be wrong. I'm black, I'm a woman, I can't even keep a husband. Something got to be wrong with me. But I didn't know what it was, so I just kept drinking. I kept drinking all the way through, okay? About that time, I think I started doing, after I got divorced, I started doing my geographic cures, okay? I really believed that wherever I could move and find happiness. I kept looking for happiness all over the United States, y'all. I lived in 11 cities in 10 years looking for happiness. I couldn't find it anywhere, okay? And I'm still miserable. I'm going down here drastically, okay? Have no clue why I'm so miserable, though. I'm just miserable, okay? And at that time, the drugs and the alcohol were working for me, guys, okay? They were working good because I moved to a new city. I moved to L.A. I'm going to move to L.A. Lord have mercy, y'all. I went to Disneyland every other week for the first 6 months I was in L.A. Love Mickey Mouse, y'all, okay? I felt good, okay? But somewhere on the line, I started to feel less than again. Started to feel like something's wrong with this picture. And I started drinking and drugging again. Now, somewhere along the line, guys, somewhere along the line, I'm not sure when it happened, I stopped using the drugs, y'all, and they started using me, okay? I lost a whole lot of what's going on, what's happening, okay? I was still miserable. I didn't know what to do to feel better. Had no idea. I tried everything I knew, up to and including suicide, to feel better, y'all. And y'all know I couldn't even kill myself right. Couldn't even die right, y'all, okay? You know, they talk about when I got to this program, I heard about, and the big book started reading, it was like incomprehensible demoralization. Y'all, that's the way I felt every time I woke up and I thought I was dead. You know, I couldn't even die right. So I know I'm the world's biggest screw up, y'all, but life goes on and I'm keeping on going. Now, the other thing that I had was I kind of liked meeting new men in my life, okay? I had a lot of them, y'all, okay? But the bad part about that was every man I ever dated was either a drug addict or a drug dealer. If I found a man that was straight, I didn't want him. You know, he was dull, you know? I want somebody exciting in my life. So all the men that I dated were either drug addicts or drug dealers, okay? So I've tried everything I know. I've tried killing myself on 3 or 4 occasions. Couldn't do that. I'm miserable. And one of my friends had tried to kill themselves, and they had become a vegetable. They told me they had, you know, in the hospital, they were just a vegetable. So I didn't want to end up like that, okay? So I decided, well, God, I guess you just don't want me to be happy, and I just have to live until you want me to be happy. And when you do, Lord, I guess I just have to live until that, okay? I stopped trying to kill myself, all right? 1985, I met this young man. Now, he lived in L.A., and I lived in Atlanta, Georgia at the time, okay? Now, my younger brother is an entertainer. So this guy that I met worked for another group. My brother's group was playing. We were playing at auditorium one night, and my brother's group was dressing on this side, and the other group was dressing on this side, and this young man came to our side, and I was wondering, what are you doing over here? But, you know, anyway, I started dating him, y'all. Of course, he was a drug addict, but I didn't know it. He lived in L.A. I lived in Atlanta. We would communicate long distance. We'd see each other occasionally. And every time I saw him, see, I didn't tell him I was using. He didn't tell me he was using. We didn't have to tell each other that stuff, you know? And I could do my little thing because I was in Atlanta, Georgia. He'd do his thing in California. So one night he called me up and says, "Dot, I got to leave Los Angeles." I'm going, "Okay, why?" He said, "Because I'm addicted to cocaine. And I just robbed the dope dealer. I've got to get out of town." My first thought was, "Come on to Atlanta, baby. We got plenty of cocaine down here." So he came to Atlanta, okay? And at that time, he was ready to get sober. So see, he lived in L.A., so he'd been introduced to Cocaine Anonymous in Los Angeles, okay? I never even heard of it. Y'all, I promise y'all, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't even remember hearing an AA back then, okay? If I'd heard about it, I thought they'd come out the motor club. I swear to God I did, okay? So when he got to Atlanta, he asked me, he says, "Do they have Cocaine Anonymous here?" I said, "I don't know." He says, "Well, I need to find a CA meeting." So I look it up. Good little girlfriend I am. Good little caretaker I am. I go to phone book, and I look up Cocaine Anonymous, and sure enough, y'all, they had a CA meeting that Thursday night in town. So I said, "Baby, yes, sweetheart, they got CA here." So I take him to a meeting. I get dressed up, y'all. High heel shoes, all my finery. Take my boyfriend to a meeting, okay? So we go to this Cocaine Anonymous meeting. I really expect to see cocaine addicts. See, I don't have any idea what a cocaine addict is. I think in my head, I thought I knew what a cocaine addict was. See, because you see, I tell you, I had used every drug imaginable, okay? I mean, when I got to these rooms, y'all, I don't think there was any drug. No, I didn't do downers, okay? But everything that, if somebody come to me and say, "Here, try this diet, get high on it," I try it. I didn't care what it was, you know? So I had gone through my gamut of all the drugs, you know? I had gone through I started off with weed, told you that. I mean, not sorry, I started off with amphetamines, had twisted alcohol, gone through the weed, gone to the LSD status, had gone through a whole bunch of drugs, including cocaine, okay? Now, I remember the first time I did cocaine, it kind of like burned my nose. And then when they told me I could smoke, I thought, "Oh, hell yeah, smoking's much better than snorting," okay? Now, I was really at the bottom, guys, okay? And I think I was a little bit below bottom. But you see, because I am this black female, keep that in mind still, okay? And this is 1985. I satisfied two minorities for most folks. You know, a woman and female, I still had my job, nobody hadn't fired me yet, okay? But then I was an overachiever, okay? Because I kept doing things, I was an overachiever. But you know, I still wonder how come somebody hadn't told me I had a cocaine problem. I mean, because I could out-drink the Dallas Cowboys, goddamn, I could drink anything. I could out-smoke y'all, you know what I mean? You know, somebody get smoked, I could out-smoke all y'all, I want some more, okay? I guess I got a lot of body weight or some, whatever it is, but I could drink most folks and I smoke most folks, so I didn't think I had a problem. Because I could stop. Remember that. Every time I was using one of these other drugs, y'all, and consequences happened, I stopped. I remember I had been drinking scotch. I had a major blackout one time, y'all. Major blackout. I don't remember anything. Couldn't put it back together at all. Y'all know what I did? For 3 weeks, I got scared, real scared, okay? And didn't drink scotch no more, okay? Next time I thought, it was wearing off. I thought, "I know, I started drinking cognac," okay? Started smoking weed. I remember one night, I got high. And weed made me want to eat, y'all. I'm sorry, okay? I was smoking weed one night and I went to the refrigerator. I ate everything in the refrigerator that was cooked. I started eating all the raw stuff then, okay? So I figured, maybe y'all not smoking weed no more, baby, okay? So I started doing mescaline. I did mescaline for a long time until I saw these damn pink elephants flying all over the place, y'all, okay? I remember one night, y'all, I saw elephants flying every damn way. I thought, "Lord, have mercy, what is this?" You know. I thought, "Well, maybe you need to stop doing mescaline, all right?" You see, so when I got to these rooms, y'all talking about people who couldn't stop. Hey, I could stop. I stopped many times, okay? Anyway, go back. Take my boyfriend to his first CA meeting. We walk into the meeting. Now, keep in mind, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, okay? We walk into the meeting, and I'm wondering, what's up with this meeting, okay? Because he and I were the only two black people in the whole room. And but that's white. And I'm looking around wondering, okay, we go in, we sit down. They had all these stupid signs on the wall. Now y'all gotta keep in mind, I'm off the streets, okay? I had no treatment or nothing. I go to a CA meeting with my boyfriend for the first time. I'm coming to bring him. He the only one got a problem, I don't have one, right? They had all these stupid signs all on the wall. There was one sign that said, in order to keep it, you got to give it away. What the hell do they mean by that? How you gonna keep it and give it away at the same time? They had another sign that said, the elevator to sobriety is broken. You gotta take the steps. Y'all, I walked all over that building with an elevator, okay? Now, this first meeting that I went to was at a place, it's called really Stone Mountain, Georgia, okay? And that's the home of the KKK, I gotta understand this, okay? Now, we don't do black folks in this meeting, all right? So when I went to look for the elevator, couldn't find it, I started opening all the, I went to the bathroom, opened every drawer in the bathroom. I opened every closet I came to. I was looking for the sheets and robes, y'all, okay? Because there's no way you can convince me that I had not come to a KKK meeting, all right? I didn't find none of that stuff, okay? Now, let me tell you about the first meeting I came to. Now, see, I didn't think I was a cocaine addict, y'all. I told you that earlier, okay? I wasn't an addict because I could stop. My theory was I could stop whenever I wanted to. Y'all couldn't, my boyfriend couldn't stop. You know, that's when he had a problem. I could stop. So the first meeting I went to, I remember this real well. I went to a meeting. Before I went to the meeting, though, y'all, let me tell you how my life was. You see, I had long since hit the bottom, okay? I hadn't been to jail yet. But I had done everything else. I was into a whole lot of white-collar crime, y'all. I thought I was a white-collar crime queen, okay? You know, I remember this well because the day he came to Atlanta, the car I was driving, had no clue whose name was on the contract. I lied so much, okay? Had no clue. My apartment was fully furnished. Every piece of furniture I had gotten off the goddamn streets out of the garbage can, okay? Let me go back and tell you, now, I still program a computer to make it $55,000 a year. That's where I was living the day he came to my house, okay? I had two televisions. The one on the bottom gave me the sound, and the one on the top gave me the picture. I was threatened eviction because I'm the person who, I 3 months they evict you in Georgia. And I get 2 months and 14 days behind and go pay a month's rent so I'm going to get evicted. I was threatened eviction that day, y'all. Oh, y'all, I was bad check queen. I wrote bad checks everywhere. I remember the day he got there, y'all. I had $400 in return check charges. That don't mean covering the checks that were bad. Okay. Had $400 in return check charges. I'm wondering. Okay. Now, he got a problem because he can't stop smoking cocaine. I hadn't even seen the unmanageability in my life, y'all, okay? My life was totally unmanageable, all right? So we go to this meeting, and I talk about the sign on the wall. At the end of the meeting, everybody got up in a circle. And they said, keep coming back. I looked around and wondered, what the hell I'm coming back for, okay? But they said I need to bring him back. So, okay, I'm going to bring him back. Good little girlfriend I am. I'm going to bring him back. Now, the other thing that came back, y'all, I promise y'all, okay? Now, keep in mind, we don't have two black folks in this room. All these cute little white girls come up hugging him. Said, no, honey, I'll bring you back tomorrow night, okay? These white girls can't get you. I'm bringing you back tomorrow night myself. They did, you know, so, okay. They told me in that meeting, the second meeting went to, the first meeting went to, they were talking about the second step. Came to believe that power, great ourselves could be the source of sanity. And y'all read y'all in the preamble and all the other readings y'all do, y'all say God about 10 times. I'm wondering, this is a religious program. I ain't about ready to do what Jim Jones did, go get my ass kicked, okay? Y'all know who Jim Jones was. He was a religious fanatic that was somewhere in Guyana somewhere, okay? So I would ask somebody after the meeting was over, is this a religious program? I said, no, it's a spiritual program. I asked a whole bunch of folks, well, what's the difference in religion and spirituality? Couldn't nobody give me an answer, y'all. you go to these old times in AA, right? Ask them, what's the difference in religion and spirituality? They would pat you on the back and say, keep coming back, baby. More will be revealed. I figured they didn't know either, right? All right, so go back to this first meeting or two. They told me to buy a big book. They told my boyfriend he needed to buy a big book to go to a meeting every day for 90 days, buy a big book, and don't use no matter what. They said, if his ass falls off, pick it up and take it to a meeting with you, okay? So I figured he could do that. And I'm a good little girlfriend. I'm going to take him back to the meeting every day. But now y'all got to understand, I still ain't got no problem, okay? So I started taking him back to the meeting every day. And somewhere along the line, y'all, I started hearing my story being told. You see, because you see, that first meeting I went to, I was uncomfortable as hell because I thought it was a KKK meeting. But I felt right at home, y'all. Y'all know what I mean? I feel like I was right at home, guys, okay? And people were talking, I look at them and say, my first meeting I went to, that first 90 days, I go into a meeting and I compare. One guy came in and said he shot up in his jugular veins. I went, damn, you know, I never did that, so I ain't no addict, okay? I was not wanting to be an addict. But somewhere in that 90-day period, y'all, I heard my story being told. You see, if you were living like I was living, the day he came to me, I went to my first CA meeting, you would know something's wrong. You don't make $55,000 a year and your bed on the floor with no box springs and mattress, okay? Something wrong, y'all, with this picture. But I hadn't seen it. So I keep going to meetings. Okay, 90 days is over. I finally heard my story being told. This lady had told my story in a meeting one day. I thought, well, maybe I got a problem. See, I could stop. I knew I could stop, y'all. I had stopped before. I stopped one time through. You get a cold, they give you penicillin, and they say, don't drink for 3 weeks. I stopped for 3 weeks and wouldn't even drink, okay? It was thoroughly convinced I could stop. I subsequently found out, y'all, that I may could have stopped, y'all. My problem was I couldn't stop. My problem was I couldn't stop starting, okay? I had to learn how to stay stopped, y'all. And I came to these rooms, I heard people talking, and I figured y'all gonna teach me how to stay stopped, okay? They told me to buy a big book, don't use no matter what. Oh no, they said, Doc, you got to learn to trust. Because for the first 3 months, y'all, I go to meet my boyfriend, and I raise my hand when they ask for newcomers and visitors, and I say, my name is Dot, and I'm here with him, and that's what I did for 90 days, y'all, okay? Now, somewhere along that 90-day period, I finally heard my story being told. I said, well, maybe I am an addict, okay? I started remembering all the stuff that I had done, all the things that, you know, like all them, like them LSD trips and shit, the pink elephants, you know? And I got to this program, and somebody said, what's your drug of choice? I told them, yours. Whatever you had, if you told me to take it, try, you know, here, your first one's always free. I know that, don't you? Here, Doc, try this. I tried that. Whatever y'all had, I was going to try it, okay? So I finally realized, well, maybe I'm an addict. But I didn't think I had to work but the first two steps. I had not planned to work anything but steps 1, 2, and 3. Because I was going to never tell about all the stuff I'd done in my life. Y'all crazy. See, I'm as bad as y'all. I'm a unique addict. So I started to the best of my ability, you know. I started working steps 1, 2, and 3. And I could keep going to these meetings, you know. And they say things to me like, Dot, you gotta change. Change what? They say stuff like, Dot, the same person will use again. You see, I don't want to use it anymore. But I don't have to do no work to not use anymore. Y'all understand? Work some steps. That meant work. I don't want to do no work. It's so funny because those first 18 months I was in these rooms was a trip and a half, y'all. Because I didn't have, I call that my sobriety year, okay? Because I was just dry. I had no sobriety at all. I hadn't worked no steps. I hadn't done nothing. I thought I worked the first 3 steps to the best of my ability. But I hadn't, you know? I was just going to meetings every day and not using. Y'all call it white knuckling. I had to call it black knuckling, okay? And after 18 months in these rooms, I found 3 hours a day where I felt wonderful, guys. 3 hours a day, I felt absolutely fantastic. I went to a meeting every day, go have a coffee afterwards. 3 hours a day, I felt absolutely fantastic. The other 21 was still screwed up real bad, okay? But see, for this attitude, those 3 hours a day was more than I'd ever had before. I was grateful to get 3 hours where I didn't feel bad and didn't hate myself. So I'm going around Poor baby, y'all, I'm sponsoring girls and shit, y'all. Poor babies, I feel so sorry for them, okay? Didn't have an ounce of recovery trying to sponsor somebody. I was still writing bad checks. You know? I was still doing all that stupid stuff, still writing bad checks, you know? You know, like if payday was coming, I had to sit down to a sign. I had 3 bank accounts, I cut the checks through. You know, I tell myself, if you get paid Friday, then on Monday you go write a check at this store, and I didn't know how long it took that man's checks to get to the bank. So on Tuesday, I run for $100. On Tuesday, Wednesday, go back, write one for $125, put $100 back in the bank to catch that one I wrote for the first time, you know. Keep going. Yeah, I worked hard, okay? Worked real hard doing that shit, okay? And this after 18 months, y'all, I still have not figured out that I need to do anything, all right? So, I'm still dating. I have to laugh at myself sometimes, y'all, okay? I'm still dating drug dealers and drug addicts. Dating them, okay? I tell the drug addicts, baby, we can date, but I can't go out with you while you're using. You know, I got a little sobriety now. I've got 18 months. I ain't using 18 months. Still, I go to bars, y'all, and I find one of the boys in there. I like young men. I find one of the guys in there who looked like he needed somebody. I was that mother figure. I find somebody. Come on, baby, let me take you to an AA meeting. Come on, baby, let me take you to a CA meeting. I'm going to bars, y'all, pulling men off bar stools, taking them to CA meetings and shit, okay? One day I was talking to my sponsor. I got a sponsor, y'all. They told me to get a big book, get a sponsor. And you know all the shit y'all told me to do? I bought a big book. Nobody said read it. Y'all just said buy it, okay? I had a sponsor. I call him every day. We didn't talk about shit, but I call him every day, okay? Somebody else talking to my sponsor and mentioned the hair. I said something about going to the bar. She says, baby, what are you doing going to the bar? I told her I was dating these guys. She was, you know, now I'm starting to use the phone. Well, he's still using. She's telling me, oh, she saw me with a drug addict. She knew he was because they used to use together a long time ago, right? She said, baby, what are you doing with that man? I said, well, that's my boyfriend. She said, baby, do you realize he's an active drug user? Well, that's okay. He doesn't use it in front of me. She said, baby, I gotta tell you something. She says, what you doing? She said, that's called rationalization. She said, you still writing this bad check, that's called justification. She said, rationalization, justification, and masturbation are 3 ways you can screw yourself. About that. But I still wasn't sure I was ready to start working the steps. You see, because I'm still thinking, y'all got to understand, I'm thinking I'm doing fantastic. I ain't using no more, okay? I got a little money in my pocket, y'all, okay? I know who I slept with last night, you know? And I can remember it was good or not, you know what I mean? So I'm doing fantastic, y'all. Ain't nothing wrong with me. I don't need no more help than this. So then one night, oh, it's so funny, y'all, because all my friends were calling me Summer. Now, I thought they were calling me Summer, y'all, because I like to wear these loud colors. I used to wear a bow in my hair every day, a little fly in my hair every day. And I go around, and they say, hey, Summer. I smile, hey, baby, how you doing? I thought it was a compliment. Y'all, I was 5 years sober before I realized that they were calling me Summer. Because some are sicker than others, okay? Y'all, my little ego got so deflated when I found it out. Because I promise y'all, I thought Summer was a Cuban nickname, y'all, okay? Summer, sicker than others, okay? Now, remember I bought a big book. I hadn't read it. I got a sponsor. I didn't use them. Now, I don't know what would have happened, y'all, but one night I was having this problem with my boyfriend, y'all. I was having this problem. I wanted to have sex, and he didn't, okay? So he said something to me. She said something. He may have told me he didn't want to have sex. I don't know what he said, because I never heard anybody say it in the first place, okay? Now, my little feelings got all hurt because I want to have some and he don't. And I'm boohooing, I'm crying. And I get on the phone, my sponsor. I call my sponsor. And I'm boohooing and crying and telling her what has happened to me. She says, baby, calm down. What's wrong? Hold on. She said, baby, I don't understand what you're saying. She said, first of all, You sitting on a pity pot. See, you need to get up off that pity pot before you look around. You got a ring around your ass, okay? So I heard that to this day, y'all. I get on a pity pot, and today I know when I'm on a pity pot. I still think about that, and I visualize this big ass ring around my ass, y'all. And I try to get up real quick, okay? Anyway, she says, okay, baby, stop and tell me what's wrong. So I went ahead to tell her. I said, I want to have sex. And my boyfriend don't love me no more because he didn't want to have sex with me tonight. Now, it was about 11:30 at night, y'all. She didn't want to hear that shit, okay? She says to me, baby, have you read the big book? I said, no, ma'am, I ain't read it. She said, read what? She said, honey, it don't matter. Just go pick the big book up and read whatever the page opens to, just read it and call me back in the morning. So, okay, I stopped crying. Long enough to go find the big book. I had to go get it, dust it off, y'all, okay? Dust it off. Went open the big book up. She said, the big for that page, don't do this, read. So I got the big book, and I opened the big book up, y'all. And there it was. S-E-X on the first line of that page. I looked at the page number, because I said, oh, here it is, sex. Page number was 69. Y'all got that, huh? I started thinking, hell, maybe this big book got something I need to see, y'all, okay? So that's really how I started reading the big book. Maybe this big book got something I need to see. But have y'all heard the joke about the lady who told the 69? Y'all have a telling this joke. This other lady was very promiscuous, okay? She came to the program, very promiscuous, and she was having a sexual problem. She was trying to have sex with every man in the program, all right? So our sponsor told her to go home and read page 69, because our sponsor said, we don't tell you what to do about your sexual problems. Read page 69, and maybe you can get some insight on what you need to do. So that night she gets home, and she's supposed to read page 69. But by the time she got home, she forgot. So she went to page 96 instead. And let me tell you what page 96 says now, okay? Now, y'all got to remember now, she's wanting to have sex with everybody, and she got a sexual problem. And page 96 says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. It says, search out another alcoholic and try again. Sure to find someone desperate enough to accept what you have to offer with eagerness. If you don't believe me, go home and read page 96, okay? It says just that, all right? Okay, so I thought that was good, y'all. Anyway, so I started reading the big book, y'all, because I figured if it had that much to tell me on page 69 about sex, maybe it had something I could read and find out, okay? So I finally started reading the big book, okay? And, you know, I go to these meetings, I'd be boohooing and crying, y'all. I was a crybaby, okay? I go to meetings, everything was a problem. I had problems all over the place. And somebody would come up and pat you on the back and say, keep coming back, baby. It gets better. I look at them and say, what the hell that means? Shit, I want a problem. I'm going to answer my problem. Don't be like, it gets better. But I kept coming back, y'all, because they told me to keep coming back. Because it gets better, okay? You know what? After I got through working the steps, I really found out that the itch, because I kept thinking my brother gonna get a better boyfriend, gonna get a better job, have more money. That's the itch I thought y'all were talking about, okay? After I got to work in these steps, I found out that the itch y'all were talking about was me. Yeah, I was getting better one day at a time, y'all, and had no clue that I was doing it, okay? This program has been amazing, guys, okay? It really has been. So I started with the big book. Started to work the steps, and that's when it became a trip, y'all, okay? I started to work the steps. My sponsor told me, maybe you got to work these steps if you want to feel better. Didn't have a clue what y'all meant by working the steps. I thought I'd go climb some. And I ain't into no physical labor, y'all, okay? I'm sorry, all right? But okay, I'm going to try it. She said, baby, you got to do them. So, all right, I started working the first step. Let me get my steps out, because they're on the wall somewhere. Hold on. Let me tell you what this first step says. Wherever I got my steps written. I think it's here. First step says, we admitted we were powerless over cocaine and all my altering substances that our lives have become unmanageable. Okay? My life was unmanageable. But I'm not quite sure I was powerless, okay? One question I was proud. I live my life as a manager. You don't make $55,000 a year and have a two televisions, one that don't work and one that does, okay? You don't make as much money as I was making and have your bed on the floor. I knew my life was unmanageable. But I didn't think I was proud, but y'all know why don't you? Because you see, remember I was telling about every time a drug did me bad, I stopped using that drug and used something else. Never had done with me, I was powerless, okay? So I finally said, okay. She said, well, if you don't believe, just act as if. What the hell does that mean? She said, but just pretend, baby. That's what it means. I said, okay. She goes, you got to get through these steps, sweetheart. You got to get through these steps. So I went, okay, I believe. She then went to the second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I had grown up with a God in my life, okay? My mom was a very Christian woman, so I grew up and knew what God was. However, I hadn't come to believe, because you know there are many nights, y'all, that I'd be out, get messed up. I go home and make the room spinning around, head spinning. I make it home by the grace of God. That's the only way I made it home. And I remember thinking, God, just let me feel better and get through this and I never do it again. Y'all, I did it again, okay? So by the time I got through this room, I did not think there was a God that was listening to me anywhere. And y'all kept telling me about this God thing. I remember the God of the pulpit in my mama's church. They had this long, flowing brown hair, had beautiful blue eyes, and now, I don't think that's a God. That's the God that I want to pray to, is it? You know, they said, God, I'll tell you what, my sponsor. Don't think about God, because that hit me a long time. God thing took me a long time, y'all. Just think about G-O-D as being good, orderly direction. Because, see, I want a bathroom to turn my life, my will over to that white man and pulpit, okay? I want a bathroom to do that, okay? She said, think about it being good, orderly direction. I said, okay, maybe I can do that, all right? You know, the second step says that it restores the sanity. You know, and I really realized, I didn't even know I was insane, y'all, okay? But on one of my suicide attempts, I remember hearing them say, don't tell the police she did it intentionally or they'll put her in the insane asylum. So I thought, maybe I was insane. I just didn't know. You know, I kept saying, I'm insane. Y'all just ain't found out about it yet, okay? That's what the problem was. So I kept on going, and then second step became hard for me because I didn't really know. She said, just pretend versus second step. I'm already pretending on the first one. She said, think about God as being good order direction. Okay, I can do that too. She said, now we got to work step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Now, first of all, I don't really think I like this God I got in the first place, okay? And that's something they told me. They said, get your own concept of God. You didn't use your mama's God? Oh, this is what she told me. She said, okay, baby, here's the exercise for you. Go home tonight and write down everything you want your God to be. I went home that night, and my God was, keep in mind, y'all, this 1985, 80-something, right? Mid-80s. I go home, my God, I want to be 6'4". I want to have an afro out to here. I want to wear, what's those kind of, bell-bottom pants. I brought all that kind of stuff, y'all, okay? So I took it back to her, and she says, okay, baby, that's your God. That's all there is to it? That's my God? Yeah, baby, that's your God. So then I had to, she says, you got to turn her train life and will over to him. I didn't have a clue how to do that. What's life and will? She said, your life and your will are your thoughts and your actions. I didn't have a clue what life and will meant. All right, what do thoughts and actions mean? She said, your thoughts are your life and your will. You've got to learn to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. How do you do that, y'all? I didn't have a clue how you do that. I didn't know. She said, here, let me show you something. She said, it's just a decision, it's not hard. She took a glass of water. We went to a restaurant after meeting one night. I'm trying to do the third step. She said, here's a glass of water. She said, she had a glass of water over my head. And she said, I have just made a decision to pour this glass of water over your head. I was ducking and dodging. Bitch, don't you pour that water on my head? I was thinking that right now. I'm sorry. I was ducking and dodging. And I'm waiting for the pour, right? She said, no, Dad, I made a decision to pour it. Well, what does that mean? She says, until I do, nothing's happened. She said, that's all, that second step, their step is. You make a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. That's all it is. You make the decision. Okay. She said the first three steps don't involve any action at all. I said, said, okay, well, how do you turn your life in widow to the care of God? She says, you simply work steps 4 through 9. I went, wow, is that all? So I set out to work steps 4 through 9, okay? Yeah, because the first time I read them on the wall, y'all, I'm thinking, this is some big shit up here. I can't do this, y'all know? All them big words y'all were using and stuff. So work steps 4 through 9, you can turn life and will over to the care of God. So I went ahead and started to work the rest of the steps, okay? I did pretty good, but when I got to that step 4, I had to write down these people that, who at home? My moral inventory, all right? I'm writing down, you know, all this stuff, and she told me I had to put my brother on there, the brother who had sexually molested me. But I didn't hurt him. I'm going to put him on my list. She said, baby, because you got to forgive him somewhere down the line. I couldn't understand the job, but because by this time, things are going a little bit better for me, things are getting to be real good, I'm listening to my sponsor. I wrote his name down, y'all, because she told me to, okay? I wrote down a little something over on the side about him. I wrote him down. Didn't really think I needed to, but I did. All right, so I'll go through steps 5 and 6 and go through all the rest of the steps. Because I couldn't see the harm my brother had done. I couldn't see the harm I'd done to my brother, y'all. He had done all the harm to me, okay? So by the time I get to step 9, she tells me, I've got to forgive my brother. How do you forgive this man who had taken my virginity, y'all? How do you forgive him? She says to me, baby, if you want to be free, you've got to find a way. She said, every night, go to bed for the next 90 days. She told me first to do it for three weeks, I think. She said, every night you go to bed and you say to God, pray for your brother to have health, wealth, and strength and love. That was a difficult job, okay? I go to bed, didn't mean it. I'm going to tell you exactly what I said. God, give that motherfucker health, strength, because I didn't mean it, y'all, okay? But she said, if I did it every day for 3 weeks, I'd be free. I didn't believe that. Because, you know, the first 2 weeks, I was calling all kind of names. By the third week, I started realizing, we ain't calling motherfucker no more, you know? I'm just saying, God, bless him, Lord, give him wealth, health, strength, and love. And then she said, well, keep on doing it, because I hadn't let it go, y'all, okay? She said, if you ever want to let something go, that's how you do it, you pray for him. So I kept on praying for him. And y'all know what? It took me about, 6 or 8 weeks to let him go, but I finally let him go. I didn't hate him anymore. I could think about him, y'all, and didn't hate him. So I knew I'd let him go, y'all, okay? Y'all, these steps are miraculous, okay? They really do work, y'all. They work better than anything ever worked in my life before, okay? These steps work, I promise you, okay? So I'm gonna tell her, okay, I'm through with step 4. What next? She said, you got to make your amends. And how do you make amends? There were, for instance, my younger brother, who's an entertainer. I used to go on the road with him a lot as an entertainer, and he liked women, but he had a wife. And I was like his madam. He'd be on stage singing and point the woman he wanted in the audience, and I'd go up to it and get him for that night, okay? Now, he had a wife, okay? But that's the kind of stuff I did for him, okay? So now they tell me I gotta make all these changes in my life, okay? I gotta stop being his madam. How do I do that? She said, you just stop, all right? So I really stopped going out getting him dates. Because she said, I couldn't go to his wife and say, honey, I'm sorry, I got your husband dates. I couldn't make that kind of amends. She said, well, baby, if you can't make an amends that way, the best thing you can do to make an amends is to change. Yeah, see, I didn't realize that step 9 meant change, okay? I thought I physically go say, I'm sorry to somebody about something. I go to the same person 5 times and say, I'm sorry I did that to you. I'm trying to be a good little ASL, y'all. I'm trying to be good, okay? I go up and say, baby, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I go up and do it again. She said, baby, the way you work step 9 is to change. I said, oh, okay. So then, guys, I went on to steps 10, 11, and 12. And by the grace of God, y'all, I finally got some of the promises started coming true in my life, okay? You know, on page 80, what page are they on? 80-something in the big book. 80. Okay, hold on. Page 83 in the big book. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through, since we're going to find a new freedom and a new happiness. You see, guys, as a result of working these steps, the promises that started to come true in my life. So she's going to find a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, it's amazing because, excuse me, I walked around in 1964 with signs with Martin Luther King. I grew up in segregation. I walked around Martin Luther King signs that saying, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, y'all. And I was still a slave, y'all, to the drugs, alcohol, men, hot fudge cake. Still a slave, okay? That's funny. The promises say, I need to find them. 80, what y'all say? 83. Because I forgot them. 83. Hold on. That would be really great for it. If I can find 83 in the big book. Hold on. Thanks. Here they are. Here they are. A new freedom, a new happiness. It says, you will not regret the past, nor will you shut the door on it. It says, you will comprehend the word serenity, and you will know peace. That's one of those things, guys, that I had not comprehended. You know, I didn't know what serenity was. I knew what it looked like. You see a picture of Hawaii with the white sand, you know, the diamond head in the background. I know what serenity looks like. I was like, that's serenity. The waterfalls in Tennessee. You know what it looks like, okay? But y'all, I know it felt it inside here. After I finished working that next step, y'all, I woke up one morning, y'all. The grass was green and it was sparkling dew because it had been dry. The grass was green and sparkling. You on a cane, too. Thank you, sweetheart. The grass was green and sparkling. The birds were chirping and I didn't want to kill them. You know, the sun was shining and the grass was sparkling and stuff. And I wonder, what is wrong? I must be going to die tomorrow. So I called my sponsor and said, what's wrong? It's beautiful outside. She said, baby, she said, don't worry about it. That's what we call serenity. I didn't know that, y'all. I finally felt it for the first time. Okay? They have a clue what it felt like until I got through those steps. For you who comes in here, if you're looking for serenity, y'all, please work the steps to the best of your ability. I tell the world this, you ain't got to work them perfect. They told me when I got here. They said, work step one perfect, though. Step one, so I only got to work perfect. They said, work step one perfect, and God will give you the opportunity to mess up the other 11, y'all, okay? He will, right? A new freedom, a new happiness. We will never get the past, we'll just shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word surrender with no peace. Oh, that's a good one for me. You know, I always thought when I read serenity, I thought it meant freedom from the storm. You know what I mean? I thought I'm going to never have no more problems ever again in life with serenity. I thought it meant freedom from the storm. That is what serenity means for me today. Today, serenity means peace in the middle of the storm, y'all. And I can find it anywhere I need it, y'all, because today I have peace, okay? Three years ago, I was flying home. I had become a software consultant. And I had this perfect job, y'all. They allowed me to travel all over the country, okay, going to client sites, and they paid for it. I was on my way home from, I think, Philadelphia, my name, and I'm on an airplane. We just left Philadelphia, and we were just leaving Atlanta. I was leaving Austin. I moved to Austin, Texas in 1990 in my recovery. They told me it was portable. They said, Dad, I was getting ready to leave. And I was so busy. Yo, I don't want to leave, y'all. I got to leave my means. I don't want to leave nobody here. They said, baby, recovery is portable. Pick it up and take it with you. I didn't know that. So I picked it up and took it to Austin with me, okay? I get to Austin. I get a whole new brand, new bunch of people, new groups I'm going to. All this stuff is good anyway. So I'm flying back to Austin that day on an airplane, and we just took off. We got to the 32,000 feet, and the pilot comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, we've reached our cruising altitude. Sit back and relax and enjoy your ride to wherever I was going, right? Atlanta, wherever. You know, I'm sitting back, okay, relaxing. About 2 minutes later, he comes back on. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an emergency. We're returning to Austin because we've just lost an engine. Now, the first thing I'm wondering is, what plane am I on? You know, some got two, some got three, some got four. I'd be on one of those planes that didn't have but two. And we just lost one. I thought, I am doomed, okay? But I'm sitting there, and everybody around me, bring me a double scotch, bring me a this, bring me that. They all scared to death because we lost the engine, right? I'm sitting there, what? You guys taught me this. What can I do? I'm strapped to this seat that this big with 32,000 feet in the air. I can't run. So what do you do? So I sat there and continued to do what I was doing. I said my little prayer, God, that will be done, not mine. This is my prayer that I always say, because I can't go nowhere, okay? That will, Lord, not mine. And people all around me said, baby, ain't you scared? Well, what's going to happen, going to happen. Anyway, to make a long story short, the plane landed without any kind of problem, okay? They, of course, we get. Y'all ever been on a plane that's landing again and done lost the engine? It's 75 fire trucks all around. Scared to death when you're just landing, okay? But we landed without any problem, okay? All right, that was that serenity thing I talked about. One of the promises says your whole attitude and I look upon life will change, guys. And I promise y'all it has, okay? My whole attitude and I look upon life has changed. I remember going to the Grand Canyon 1970-something, prior to getting sober. I went to the Grand Canyon, and somebody told me it's one of the seven wonders of the world. I walked over to the edge, and I looked over, and I wondered, what's the big deal? It's just a hole. I have subsequently gone back to the Grand Canyon in sobriety. And let me tell y'all something. I walked over to the rim of my time and I looked in, and yeah, y'all, it's just a hole. What an awesome hole it is out here. Your whole attitude and I look upon life will change, okay? Life is going on beautiful for me. I'm working these steps. I'm traveling all over the United States. I got a fantastic job, y'all. Everything's going well. I meet people all over the country. I mean, I'm getting ready. I went to Phoenix and I met Kevin and a whole bunch of people. I worked in L.A. and met a whole bunch of people in L.A. And I'm going to AACA meetings all over the country, y'all. Having a great time. Sobriety is wonderful. I can tell it is, okay? Got 18 years sober at that point, y'all. I'm living fantastically. God has allowed me to continue to live. I'm now making six figures, y'all, okay? I'm some big shit, I think, okay? I'm going to meetings, all the good stuff, y'all. Life is wonderful, guys. Fantastic life. February 3rd, 2003, and I said it right. I woke up that morning, guys, and didn't have a clue where I was. I went to the doctor, and they told me I'd had a stroke. He also told me that I would no longer be able to perform the job that I was doing. My fear jumped sky high. I can't go to work anymore. First thought was, how am I going to eat? I don't have a job. Second thought was, how do I keep on driving my Lincoln? You know? Because by now, y'all got a Lincoln shit going good. I know whose name on the motherfucker. I know whose name on the car, too, okay? I'm sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. Life is wonderful. Things are going good. I got all these things that have been returned. God's returned all the things I lost. Got to give them back to me, y'all. Everything is wonderful. And they tell me I no longer have a job. And I remember in one of those promises, it says, fear of economic insecurity will leave us. All right. It took me about 3 days to realize that, guys. But on the third day, I remember getting up praying because y'all told me a lot of stuff. Fear of economic insecurity will leave me. I stopped being afraid. Y'all can tell I ain't missed a meal since then, can't you? I still drive a Lincoln, guys. All right. Fear of economic insecurity will leave us, okay? You know, it's so amazing how this program works. You know, because of you guys in this room, and those 12 steps, and the 12 traditions, the 12 promises, guys. See, today I know without a shadow of a doubt the difference in faith and trust. See, I didn't know what faith meant. I thought I had some, I didn't have any idea. You see, when I was telling about when I was working these steps and everything, believing this God, this blonde-haired, blue-eyed man on the wall. See, I believe I can. Trust means I believe he will. See, I finally learned the difference between faith and trust in my higher power, y'all. It's really amazing, guys. It's so amazing. You know, today I have found out the pain. Pain is mandatory to grow in this program. Suffering is optional, y'all. See, I had a stroke, guys. I had a lot of pain. Today, y'all see me walk on a cane. Bad from the stroke, that's because I fell. But pain is mandatory, y'all. But today, guys, I don't have to suffer anymore. Amen. I've got a higher power, God, that takes care of all that stuff for me. I don't have to suffer no more. You know, they told me back then that recovery is portable. Pick up and take it with you wherever you go. That's what I do today. Pick up and take it with me wherever I go, y'all. It's portable. You know, my stroke caused me a lot of heartache, okay? Because I had to learn how to do certain things all over again. I had to learn how to turn my damn computer on, y'all. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff all over again. I had to learn how to do that all over again. But the one thing, I lost my short-term memory, okay? But you see, I kept my long-term memory. Because you see, if I couldn't be up here talking all day if I didn't have no long-term memory, okay? Because most of what I'm talking about, y'all happened to me a long time ago, okay? Because of this program, guys, you know, it's 12 steps. And I get teary-eyed occasionally. I'm not hoping I don't cry. But y'all, my life works today because of this program. I haven't been to work since 2003, and I'm still eating. I still get a chance to travel all over the United States, guys. I don't travel for my job anymore. I travel to come and talk to people like you in these rooms. I go to Lake Tahoe often.
They love me up there, y'all.
Lake Tahoe is gorgeous. Y'all been to Lake Tahoe? Beautiful. God's country, y'all, okay? They love me up there. I go up there all the time. You know, this program does work, guys, you know. And one of my, y'all notice, I don't handle a whole lot of horror stories because I forgot about horror stories all in my life. But don't get me wrong. There were a bunch of them back there when I was using, okay? Bunch of horror stories, okay? I can't even begin to tell y'all how grateful I am that I don't have to relive that stuff today. Let me tell y'all how grateful I am that I can just wake up today, y'all.
Amen.
Before I got here, y'all was coming too. Oh. I actually lay in bed and go to sleep every night, y'all. Before I got here, I was passing out. There's a big difference in those things, guys. Y'all know that? You know, I'm so grateful I found you guys, okay? In 1980, 5 years before I found you guys, I had had one of those major blackouts in my life and didn't have a clue what had happened. You know, I had these blackouts. I had brownouts sometimes. I could piece back together little things that happened the night before. This night I had a major blackout, okay? Could not remember what had happened the night before. And I remember, at 3 weeks later, I swore, I ain't gonna drink nothing else. I did that all the time. I ain't gonna smoke nothing else, okay? I ain't gonna never take no more drugs as long as I live. Y'all know how people do that all the time? I used to do that all the time, okay? But y'all know what happened, don't you? I kept doing it all over again, okay? But this night, I had one of these major blackouts. And I got home that night. About 3 weeks later, I wrote a poem. I folded it up and put it in a drawer. Because I write poetry, by the way. And when I got sober, guys, they told me to throw away all my pipes and all my papers and all my paraphernalia. So I went home that day, I'm throwing away everything, and I found this poem in the middle of all that stuff I'm throwing away. And the poem meant a lot, y'all. I wrote it 4 years, 5 years before I got sober. Keep that in mind, okay? But the poem meant a lot to me. You know, and here in the big book, on page 15 in the big book, it says, I've seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. Now, guys, when I got to these rooms, I was on the road to nowhere and getting nowhere fast, okay? Because of you guys in this room today, I am on the road to somewhere. Now, in 1980, I wrote a poem, and it was called The Road to Nowhere. And I think about a cop because I'm not going to try to remember that stuff. Oh, here it is. Thank you. Y'all must know my mouth getting dry. Some I sound like my mouth getting dry. He bought me the water. He came and opened it. Thank y'all, okay? And it was getting dry, okay? In 1980, I wrote this poem called The Road to Nowhere. And it's approved because I am, and I wrote it, okay? The road to nowhere is crowded with people from every land, and it always seems to remind me of a murky pool of quicksand. Cause the further down the road you go, the more you start to sink. You lose your sense of direction. You may even forget how to think. Cause the people going down that road have no reason to use their mind. Cause the crowd on the road to nowhere will surely keep them in line. And if they try to turn around and go back the other way, the crowd on the road to nowhere will surely convince them to stay. But I've got a secret passage. It'll take you out of that crowd. It leads to the road to somewhere. And there you can feel very proud.
Amen.
Now the road to somewhere is lonely because there are very few people there. But all the people on that road are really going somewhere.
Amen.
They may not know where they're going, but they're sure of what they'll find. They know that the road to somewhere will give them peace of mind. They found the secret of happiness. You can tell by the look on their face. They got off the road to nowhere, and now they're going someplace. If you just find yourself on that road, the road that's going nowhere, stop. Take a look around. You'll only find losers there. People with good intentions, but never carrying them through. People who make excuses for all the wrong things they do. People who live an entire lifetime full of fear and doubt. People who may never know what happiness is all about. But if you want to be a winner and you need to find peace of mind, get off that road to nowhere and leave that crowd behind.
Amen.
You guys, I wrote that poem in 1980. Cocaine Anonymous and you people in this room have been my road to somewhere. And I tell the world, I don't know yet if God has opened the gates of heaven and let me in. You guys, but I know for a fact he's opened the gates of hell and has let me out, y'all.
Yeah.
And for that, I am truly grateful.